This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
Yeah, Root is in. And other than that, I'm just looking for guys to play our system, play hard, play well, defend, contribute offensively. Root needs to get some games. He hasn't played for quite some time now. So we need to get our guys ready for the playoffs.
Wow. Jan Roots is in. Steven Stamkos spoke to the media today. He says he's on track, hopefully, to be there for game one, round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs as the Lightning gets set to take on the Dallas Stars tonight. Three more regular season games for the Bolts, and still an outside chance to get that number one overall seed in the Central, but certainly playing for home ice advantage for sure with a couple of games with the Florida Panthers coming up, and we've got a lot to discuss on the show today. Of course, I am Greg Linnelli, along with the radio voice of the Lightning, Dave Mishkin. Steve Ersnick is our producer, but right out of the gate, a very special guest to talk all things hockey. Let's welcome to the broadcast from The Athletic, one of the best in the business, Scott Burnside. Scott, great to be with you again. The playoffs are upon us. Not to say it was ever in doubt, but for the league, you think they're pretty pleased and maybe even relieved, all things considered, that the playoffs are on schedule?
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent point. Thank you for having me aboard. But it's been sort of strange to try and get your arms around just how close the playoffs are. And of course, the playoffs are going to begin a week from tomorrow on the 15th, and that'll be the first weekend of NHL playoffs. But of course, it's been such a strange year and a half or whatever it's been. But certainly this season has been a peculiar one for a host of reasons. And this probably shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that the start of the playoffs will likewise be very different from what we usually have. I mean, usually there's a great build up to the playoffs, and you know, whether it's the final playoff races and whether it's the final playoff matchups. But here it's just going to be much different, because we already know that Vancouver and Calgary will play games because of Vancouver's COVID outbreak. They will play games after the start of the playoffs. That just is the way it's going to work out. We had Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, on our podcast with Pierre LeBrun earlier this week and confirmed that, well, the plan is that the Vancouver and Calgary will play out the balance of their 56-game schedule, but the reality of it is that they will play those games after some of the American-based teams start their playoff next weekend. It's still not exactly clear when the North Division playoffs will begin, so you know, I've talked to some people who thought perhaps the evening of the 19th, which is the last regularly scheduled regular season game between Calgary and Vancouver, neither of whom figure to factor into the playoff races. So that could be the case where the end of the regular season is then followed hours later by the first Canadian playoff game. Still a possibility they could begin playoffs next weekend as well. So a lot of different sort of moving parts to it. But to your point, yes, we're on the brink of the playoffs. And I'm fascinated to see what happens in the Central. For my money, one of the most compelling divisions of the four this season. Of course, Dallas really still the only team in my mind. I know technically LA's still in it, but St. Louis will clinch a playoff spot in the West. And the Montreal and Winnipeg will be in third and fourth place in the division when it's done. But Dallas still with an outside chance at catching Nashville, but pretty critical game against Tampa tonight. And absolutely the Stars need to win if they're going to stay in the hunt.
Scott, I wanted to follow up on this North Division situation. If the Canadians clinch the last spot, and they're very close to doing so we know that Vancouver and Calgary are definitely eliminated, what are the odds that they would start the two series, the Toronto, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Montreal teams, those two series, concurrently with the Vancouver, Calgary regular season games to finish out their schedules?
My sense is that's still very much up in the air. I'm sure that, you know, from a broadcast perspective, I'm sure that Sportsnet / Hockey Night in Canada, I'm sure they would love to have Montreal-Toronto first playoff meeting, I think, since 1979 on a Saturday night. Who wouldn't want that? But there's some optics issues, and there are, and the optics aren't going to be, I mean, the optics are going to come into play because we already know that that at least some of the U.S.-based teams are going to start their playoff series 4 or 5 days before the end of the North Division regular season. We know that the 19th is the final day where Calgary and Vancouver are scheduled to play. I did talk to somebody who said, you know, again, this sort of notion of, well, if you feel that you need to hold off on starting the North playoffs until the North regular season is technically done, then you could play, you could schedule Vancouver, Calgary, because there are no fans, of course, in any of the Canadian buildings, schedule them for the afternoon of the 19th, and then begin the playoffs that evening with those four teams, as you mentioned. So still a little bit up in the air, and still some, you know, I know we talked to Bill Daly, that, again, part of what has marked all of, going back to the return to play last summer and then the 56-game schedule this year, is that you plan as much as you can and then be prepared to pivot as quickly as you need to pivot, because you just don't know what it's going to look like, right? I mean, the whole Vancouver outbreak, a lot of questions about whether they would even return to play. And I know some fans will say, well, why even bother playing those games? And it's a fair question, but there's a lot that goes into, you know, there's economics of it, there's signage, there's broadcast rights and costs. There's a whole bunch that goes into just simply, you know, putting a pin in the final three games of the regular season for Calgary and Vancouver, and there's a cost involved. And I think there is, I like the idea that the league is determined that those games will be played. And I think at the end of the day, I think it's important that all 31 teams play the 56 games, you know, barring something terrible happening between now and, you know, a week and a half from now. I think it's important that all those games are played, and certainly that's the league's plan right now.
Scott Burnside joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Scott, it looks like the Lightning are getting healthy at the right time. When you look at their regular season and some of the injuries they've dealt with and the challenges of repeating as well, has their season been underrated even for them?
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit. Look, I think there is, you know, for me, when I look at Tampa and when you look at, to me, they're at that position as an elite team and certainly as a defending Stanley Cup champions. I don't think it matters what happened to them during the regular season. I mean, you know, of course, you know, securing a playoff spot was critical to that. But, you know, whether they were a team that was in first place in the Central or, you know, and frankly, wherever they settled in, I know they have an outside shot at catching Carolina. My guess is they won't, just given, you know, the five back with three games to play. The Canes certainly have, you know, command, you know, they control their own destiny, not just in terms of the Central, but also as possible President's Trophy winners. So, but I don't think that part of it really matters. And certainly the injuries, you know, of course, not having Nikita Kucherov for the entire season and losing Steven Stamkos, and the fact that both those players, you know, the expectation or the hope is that they'll be ready to go in game one. And I think that the you know, sort of John Cooper managing this team during the regular season has been, it's been interesting to watch. I mean, listen, they're still in that handful of teams that you say, well, who could, you know, and this is, it's very difficult to handicap when you see only divisional opponents all year. It's harder to get your arms around, well, who really are the elite teams? You know, is Toronto in that group having played only in the seven, against the seven Canadian teams? I've loved the Central. I've loved what Florida has done this year. And so to me, the level of competition in the Central, I think you can argue, is as great as it is anywhere in the NHL. Maybe the East, you can make that argument too. Those teams, those four playoff teams, so closely packed and so little to separate them. But in terms of, you know, okay, who can run the table? Who can win 16 games in the coming weeks? Tampa remains very much in that discussion. I think it's going to be fascinating to see. And, you know, personally, who doesn't want to see the first ever Florida playoff series? I'm all on board for that. And I'm all on board to see, you know, if Stamkos and Kucherov come back, what What is that process? What is that transition like for, especially for Kucherov, not playing NHL action and stepping into playoff action? What's that like? And I'm really curious to see how Florida, what they bring to the table. And that will be the challenge, I think, for Tampa when you talk about repeating, to get up into that groove again. And having gone through the bubble cup run last year and all that went into that, that may be the hardest cup to win ever based on what happened in last summer. Can you get back up to that level? Can you find a way to be that team again? And I think Florida will represent a very significant challenge very early in the playoff tournament. And I can't think of anything better. I bet John Cooper's loving that aspect of it, because you're going to find out very early on whether the Lightning can find that extra gear.
Scott, on yesterday's show, Greg and I were talking about the Coach of the Year ballot, which I have a ballot as a broadcaster, and you and I digest the NHL a little differently because I'm zeroed in on one team, one division, and it's your job to kind of cover the league and pay attention to everything. But I'm just wondering, from the perspective of somebody who has a vote and votes on a lot of different categories, how challenging do you find kind of filling out your ballots this year? How challenging is that going to be relative to other years because of the fact that the teams are in their own divisions and only playing within those divisions?
It's a handful. I'm fascinated to see how what happens for you guys. It was interesting. I did a Q&A with Daryl Ray, the Razor from Dallas, and we talked about a whole bunch of issues. But one of the things we talked about was the Rookie of the Year, of course, with Jason Robertson of the Stars, and such a great season for him. And you know that from having watched very closely within the Central, the impact he's had. And, you know, how does he stack up against Kirill Kaprizov? Kirill, I said, that's probably more accurate. Daryl said the exact same thing. He said, I don't know, it's hard. I only watch Kaprizov on TV. And I vote on the Coach of the Year as a broadcaster. I've seen only eight coaches. So I only see seven coaches who aren't the coach of the team I cover. So it presents, when I think about the ballots that the Professional Hockey Writers Association members, and I'll be on the voting panel again this year for the Hart and the Norris, the Selke, the Calder is Rookie of the Year, Lady Bing. It's very difficult. And I've already started to make calls to coaches and scouts and GMs, and because you always rely on the perspective of other people who see players across the league more regularly than I do. And certainly now never going to live hockey games. And it really is, it's a huge challenge. And I think the voting panel, A, they're going to do their work. I think at the end of the day, the winners will be just winners. We won't always agree with them, but boy, it does create an absolutely completely different dynamic than we're used to in voting for them. I'm sure you feel that with the Coach of the Year, and it's always Coach of the Year for me is always a difficult one, and as a non-voter, I'm always really curious about how it works out. But I think it's an even greater challenge for and the GMs who vote on the Vezina, again, a greater challenge than we ever have, given the particular dynamics of this season.
Well, real quick, go ahead, Greg, in a second, but real quick, Scott, what I said on yesterday's show is, look, I have a bias. I'm acknowledging that bias, and that bias is based on the fact that I've seen Carolina and Florida live multiple times this year, whereas I haven't seen Toronto, I haven't seen Minnesota, I haven't seen Vegas. And so as a result, Joel Quenneville and Rod Brindamore are probably going to get more consideration along with John Cooper than some of these other coaches. But I can only go off of what I've seen and what I've digested.
It's hard. And I'm looking forward to, I love the voting, right? The vote, it's a cliche, but it's an honor to vote, on the awards that we do. I'm happy to say that I feel pretty confident in my first pick for the Hart. It might be the kid, McDavid, but yeah.
Greg may take exception. Greg may take exception. I think I know which question is coming from him, but go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, no, it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, when all the ballots are tabulated, just how it looks and how, you know, how we sort through the fact that the divisional play and playing only within your division, how that impacts at the end of the year. Well, who is the best coach in the NHL? Who is the best defenseman? I find the Norris, it was interesting, not to go off on a complete tangent, but I was interested to see Pierre LeBrun's polling of the NHL coaches and you know, where Victor Hedman fits into that and how, you know, how the landscape vis-a-vis the Norris is a lot different. And it's different for a number of reasons, part of which is that maybe Victor Hedman hasn't played at a Victor Hedman level, but for a lot of coaches, he's still the best defenseman in the NHL. And that's going to be, you know, again, that's going to be another difficult part of the ballots cast by the PHWA.
Scott Burnside joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. All right, so my partner there just, he rips the Band-Aid off there, Scott, and he wants to get right into the MVP discussion. But I won't ask you necessarily MVP vote. I think most people acknowledge Connor McDavid is going to get it. But I'm wondering, in your opinion, who's had the better year up to this point, McDavid or Andrei Vasilevskiy? Because I think both haven't just been great. They've been dominant, haven't they?
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair, and I will be surprised if Vasilevskiy doesn't win the Vezina. And I will say this though, you know, there are a number of goaltenders. Like I can tell you, I would have Juuse Saros ahead of Vasilevskiy on my heart ballot, even though he may not win the Vezina, but because as you know, the wording of the Hart Trophy, the player who's deemed most valuable to his. Most valuable to his team. I'm paraphrasing it. It's not the best player in this season necessarily, but you know what Juuse Saros has done in guiding Nashville to what I expect will be a playoff berth. He saved their season, right? He has, and so I'm curious to see where he fits into the Vezina, which I would think Vasilevskiy's at the top, but Saros should be. I would think in the top three. Where does Mike Smith fit in terms of Vezina, given the work that he has done for Edmonton, where the dynamic there is different, and the quality. You know, when you think of the people that he faces every single night, he should be in the Vezina discussion. Just because I don't think that I would have Vasilevskiy on my heart ballot necessarily, or maybe down at 4 or 5 of the 5 on my ballot, which is what we turn in, doesn't diminish what he's done. And really, you know, with all due respect to Curtis McElhaney, right, it's been the Vasilevskiy show, right? It's Vasilevskiy or no one, really, when it comes to the Lightning. And that's a way different dynamic than for a lot of teams. It's been Saros or nobody, with all due respect to Pekka Rinne in Nashville. But for other top goaltenders, it's been a little bit, there's a more even workload for a lot of players. And I think that should factor in as well. But no, listen, Vasilevskiy has been outstanding. I'll be surprised if he doesn't win the Vezina. But if he doesn't end up as a Hart Trophy finalist, I likewise won't be all that surprised either.
Scott, last one for me. You are currently with The Athletic, of course, but in a past career point in your career, you worked for ESPN, and they have the rights back, at least half of the national rights in the U.S. starting next year. How pleased were you to see that some of your former colleagues are back in, you know, NHL coverage as far as televising games?
Yes, I must admit, one of the first texts I sent to and again got one back was with Steve Levy, and then Barry Melrose and I traded emails earlier this week. And yeah, no, it's exciting. And I'll tell you what's really exciting for me. It's certainly the ESPN part of it is going to be fascinating to watch, but also, of course, with Turner Sports, coming in and really, I think for a lot of people, being the surprise B package rights winners, if we can use the winners term for this, but, you know, earning and paying for becoming the secondary national broadcast partner. I'm curious to see, you know, the relationship between Turner Sports and ESPN. And we know that, you know, when you look at how Turner Sports does basketball and baseball and the cross promotion and really the relationships with other broadcasters, and that really wasn't the case with NBC, right? It was NBC/NBC Sports, and that's all it was for hockey, and that was a dynamic. And so that's going to be very different. I'm fascinated to see how both the broadcasters, you know, how much new do we see in terms of how the games are presented, the stories that are told, the people that are telling those stories. You know, like, it sounds like Ed Olczyk will be coming to Turner Sports, and Kenny Albert maybe as well. That part doesn't surprise me. I mean, there are, there are just, you know, elite broadcasters that you expect will still be part of the hockey broadcast landscape. I expect we're going to, even though John Forslund's going to Seattle and the voice of the Seattle Kraken, my guess is that we'll see a lot, you know, you see and hear him on a national level as well. And I think Seattle wants that to happen. So that part of it's going to be really exciting. I am excited to see, okay, what kind of different looks do we see from both the new national broadcast partners? And I think it's great for the game, frankly. I think it's going to be exciting on a whole bunch of levels, and can't wait to see what it looks like next fall.
Scott, before we let you go, does the Tom Wilson debate hurt the sport at all in the long run? And do you think there needs to be a zero tolerance policy when it comes to actions like that, or even hits to the head, when we've seen it be somewhat inconsistent over the years regarding a league that really does want to protect the players, at least things we've read and heard from the commissioner and everybody underneath him?
Yeah. I don't know. Does it, you know, define, does it hurt the league? If you're a cynic, or, you know, if you take a certain view, you know, all of the attention, from Monday night and the melee and what happened. And listen, we're able to have this conversation now in the manner we're having it, because we're very fortunate. We're very fortunate that Artemi Panarin wasn't seriously injured. He's not playing again in the final. We will have missed the final three games for the Rangers of the regular season, but it sounds like it's not a dramatic injury, and it could have been way worse. And so, thankfully, that's not what we're talking about. And so you can look at it, look at all of the attention and, of course, the subsequent news made by the New York Rangers with John Davidson and Jeff Corton being shockingly fired, replaced by Chris Drury. And my sense is, and certainly the reporting indicates, that it wasn't a line from A to B necessarily, but the timing certainly was peculiar. I don't like to see that stuff. If you took the fighting out of the game, I'd be all right. And certainly I don't know that the NHL really has managed to get its arms around what to do with the biggest problem, which is the blows to the head. And certainly the Wilson Panarin thing involved a head injury or a potential head injury. But that's, you know, that whole scrum thing's a little different than, you know, I talked to somebody who said, go back and look at Mark Stone's hit on Tyler Bozak earlier this year in neutral zone, kind of a blindside hit to the head. And to me, those are the kinds of things that we really need to, as a game, and I would like to think that the league, and, you know, hopefully with the support of the NHLPA, that you take steps to try and eliminate, and maybe we've taken baby steps. I'd like to see a lot firmer hand from the Department of Player Safety on a lot of this stuff, and hits from behind and blows to the head. I don't think we're anywhere close to where we need to be on that kind of thing. And you mentioned consistency, man. We don't have it. There is none. And until the NHL and the NHLPA, right? They're the partners in this too. Until there's a consensus and a uniformity and belief of what is acceptable and what how you're going to punish it when people do unacceptable things. We're going to have this conversation as we have for the last 10 or 20 or, you know, 30 years. That's just the way it is, and that's an unfortunate part of the game. I frankly am not optimistic we're going to get to a resolution anytime soon, though.
Well, Scott, this is great stuff, man. I know you're busy, and it was good to catch up with you before the playoffs begin, and maybe we'll do it once the playoffs are in full force.
Yeah, so happy to talk anytime, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, Scotty. All right, that's Scott Burnside from The Athletic. Always great to catch up with him. If you want to react to anything he had to say, you can. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. We'll come back and kind of recap what Scott said. Of course, we've got the game tonight, Tampa Bay taking on Dallas. It looks like Jan Rutsa will be in the lineup. And Steven Stamkos speaks for the first time in quite some time, talking about some of the injuries he's had to deal with over the last couple of years. We'll talk about that when we return. It's Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, once again, thanks to Scott Burnside, who joined us in that previous segment to open up the show. If you want to react to anything Scott had to say, you can at Bolts Radio. I am Greg Linnelli, along with Dave Mishkin. And Dave, let's get to some news items for the Lightning. Then we can get into what Scott said, and I thought his comments about the goaltender situation across the league in terms of Saros and where he would be when it comes to the Vezina is interesting, in addition to maybe having him ahead of Vasi for the Hart because of what he's meant to that Preds team. It's a good point, and it's one that maybe is not brought up because Saros certainly doesn't have the pedigree that Vasilevsky has, but he has certainly played well, and is a big reason why, if Nashville gets into the playoffs, why they are there, because he has been very solid for them. But that's something we can get into here in a little bit. John Cooper says that Jan Rutsa will be in the lineup tonight. And we asked this question to Halpern, Jeff Halpern, yesterday. Just when it came to how much rust does a defenseman have to work off compared to some forwards? And he made it seem like maybe the forwards did because a lot of stopping and starting. But I know Brian Engblom had talked about this on one of the last calls recently, Dave, about how it's imperative to get him back in the lineup, assuming he's going to be in the top six, to get that chemistry back with whomever he's playing with, because we know how big of a deal chemistry is with defense pairings in the playoffs.
Well, if I remember how Halpy answered that question, it wasn't that he said coming back as a defenseman is easier. He just said, I have no experience in that regard. And he does have experience coming back from a long-term injury as a forward. Actually, he got hurt in the World Championships shortly after the Lightning acquired him in 08, the end of the 07-08 season and the Brad Richards trade. And Halpern went to go play for Team USA in the World Championships and hurt his knee. Yep. And was out about 6 months. He may have had other injuries. I remember that one, though, was significant. What he talked about was kind of the stopping and starting that's required as a forward is different than as a defenseman. So I guess if I were to kind of broad stroke it, I would say that maybe as a defenseman, the emphasis on timing and getting a feel for defending off the rush and closing on guys is a challenge, but you're not starting and stopping as much and like jumping into holes. That's kind of what Halpy was talking about, which if you do have a quote-unquote lower body injury, you know, whether it's your ankle or your knee or your hip, like for Kucherov, having that explosiveness for starting and stopping and jumping into areas where you can intercept pucks may be more on the shoulders of somebody who plays at forward than on defense. But that's not to say that it's easy to miss time as a defenseman and come back. And that may come down to reading the play, reading the rush, reading when you need to close on a forward who is attacking in your end. And also having a sense of when to jump in the play yourself, right? When to pinch, when not to pinch. Game situations that are hard to replicate. But good for Ruta that he's coming back. So certainly he'll get at least one game. And if they don't play him in both ends of the back-to-back, maybe two if he plays the game on Monday. We'll see.
Yeah, that would be big, and it'll be interesting to see, Dave, where he slides in when it comes to the defense pairings. I mean, I think a lot of people would think if Roots is playing well and knocks off some of that rust, that maybe he would go back to Victor Hedman because they've had some chemistry before. But I don't know, because we've seen, you know, at times Chernak play with Hedman. We've seen Savard and McDonough together. And, you know, we've seen Sergachev paired with other defensemen as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's interesting looking at, but if you are of the opinion that Rutsa and Hedman had some pretty good chemistry, are you inclined to go back to that to see if it does work and how long does it take for them to regain that chemistry? So I think that's important individually for sure, to get an idea of what Jan Rutsa can bring to the table, because let's face it, the last couple of years, Dave, heading into the playoffs, a little bit unfortunate for Rutsa. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy when he's had a pretty good regular season up to that point. So I'm sure he's excited to get back into the lineup, and we'll see how that progresses. Curtis McElhinney will be getting the start tonight. John Cooper did announce that at his press conference. Vasi, it'll be interesting, Dave, to see also, too, what his workload will look like with the remaining two games, both against the Florida Panthers. Not back-to-back situations, but Tampa Bay does play Saturday and then Monday.
And it sounds like, I mean, based on what Scott said, I know we're going to get to recapping that interview in a second, but they had Bill Daly on their podcast, Scott and Pierre LeBrun, and Bill Daly said the playoffs are starting a week from tomorrow, the 15th, which is what we had heard rumored in Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts. But I guess if you get the second banana in control in the NHL, Bill Daly, on your show, and he says it on your show, I guess that's as good as gold, right? So if the Lightning are in fact starting next weekend, let me just say this. I would be surprised if Vasilevskiy does not play tomorrow. And then if you're looking at the playoffs starting the following Saturday or Sunday, depending on if the Lightning are starting at home or starting on the road, I think I would be a little surprised if they gave him 6-7 days off. So I we're going to find out for certain, but I think whether the Lightning are locked into a spot by the end of play on Saturday or not, I guess my feeling would be we're going to see Vasilevskiy Saturday and Monday, and then he'll get the 4 or 5 days, whatever it might be, before game one of the playoffs.
Yeah, and really any concern that Vasi may be wearing down because of the workload this year, I think was put to rest basically when John Cooper was talking about, you know, where he's basically on schedule to finish compared to an 82-game season. But also, too, Dave, I mean, he got a pretty good amount of rest this past weekend. And now you factor in, if he does play on Monday, he's going to have a few more days as well. Vasi, if anything, should be well-rested. Now, whether he is sharp as maybe, you know, playing every other day leading into the playoffs, I don't know. I mean, we'll find out on whatever day that is. And it does look like that the Lightning would play on the 15th, because I was talking about this with Steve and he pointed this out. It does look like there's a Raptors game on the 16th, Dave. So it would.
Yeah, if the Lightning start at home.
Correct.
If the Lightning start on the road,
yes,
they theoretically could play on,
it's a good
on the
point.
Sunday.
Yes, I'm probably looking ahead and shouldn't be doing that, but I did. And that would be the scenario if it played out. So in many ways, Dave, again, the way the Lightning and maybe the schedule just played out this way, but I think you have to give credit to the coaching staff. If you were concerned that Vasi was going to get a lot of the workload this year, and some of that was based off of how McElhinney had played earlier in the year, and maybe you were going to feel like they had to ride Vasi a little bit more, I think the way the end of the season has played out, they have found a way to get him significant rest. And I think that's a big deal. And if Vasi plays as well as we've seen him in the past, and even more so with this rest, this added rest, that's a huge advantage for the Tampa Bay Lightning, having a pretty fresh Vasilevskiy. Again, that's assuming he gets off to a good start and there's no rust playing in to the situation coming up whenever their first game is. So McElhinney getting the start tonight. I tend to agree with you. I would be surprised if Vasi doesn't get both games. But again, John Cooper, I think in his coaching staff, they have shown recently that they know how to handle this situation and what's best for the Lightning. The other news was Steven Stamkos talk, Dave. I mean, it's nice to hear from the captain, and I think I'm paraphrasing here. All things are looking good in terms of him coming back for game one. I think he mentioned he's on track, and that he did say, you know, all these surgeries and injuries he's had the last couple of years, you never feel completely like you did before those injuries, but it's just something that even with all the rehab, you're never going to feel like you did before they occurred. But it did sound like he was somewhat or pretty optimistic that he was going to make it for game one of the playoffs, round one.
I agree. I think that's a fair interpretation of what he said. He also said that he sees the light at the end of the tunnel now, which maybe he didn't see earlier in the rehab. So all that's really positive, for sure. But I think now we know for certain he's not going to play tonight, tomorrow, or Monday. He's looking at game one of the playoffs.
Yeah. And again, that's, you know, a whole nother week where you can get rested up and get your conditioning back and all that fun stuff that comes with it. So I think actually a pretty informative news conference today from John Cooper, and then following, you know, Steven Samko speaking to the media. So we'll have all of that coverage for you coming up too for the network pregame show as well. You'll hear from Stammer as well. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio. I also asked Scott that question about who's had the more impressive regular season. This is just kind of, you know, barroom talk, Connor McDavid or Andre Vasilevsky. And I think, boy, I have to give credit to McDavid. He is approaching 100 points, David.
That's amazing.
Like he is going to get it. And in an era where it's harder to score, I've seen some people kind of downplay his achievements because they've mentioned other elite players who have done better in fewer games, and whether it's Gretzky or whether it's Lemieux, and all of that is very warranted. I think some people, we live in the moment a little too much, and we have a tendency to put guys on a pedestal and knock other guys off when we probably shouldn't because we're in the heat of the moment. But make no mistake, regardless of whether you think McDavid plays in an inferior division compared to the others, he can't control that, Dave. He's got to go against the competition in front of him, and he's dominating. And as I said before, in an era where it's hard to score, the goaltending is better, better coaching, better X's and O's, systems are a bit better. That's been really impressive, and I think also, too, what Vassy has done has been very impressive, but it was interesting to hear Scott's take on that in addition to a few other things that caught our attention.
Well, it's interesting that he used the Soros argument to say Soros has been more valuable to the Predators than maybe Vasilevsky has been to the Lightning, which I'm going to address that in a second. But is McDavid the most valuable player to his team this year? And that's where this award, it has a gray area to it. I mean, Draisaitl's on that team too. He had a pretty good year, right?
He did. He's second in scoring, right?
And if you take McDavid off that team, are they still a playoff team? I mean, they didn't control all those games that Ottawa lost or Vancouver lost. I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, I think, because what McDavid has done this year is incredible. There is no question. But there's a difference between saying he had the best season out of any player in the NHL and he was the most valuable player to his team. And we'll see how many first place votes he gets. Maybe he'll run the table. Maybe everybody, whether they feel that the important part of this is the accomplishment or the word valuable, maybe everybody votes for him first. We're going to find out when they announce the award and they reveal the voting. But that's the part of it where if you're going to marry yourself to that word valuable, I don't know that Edmonton falls out of the playoffs without McDavid. But again, I haven't watched a lot of their games. So, I mean, part of me is saying, well, maybe they do. I don't know. I have watched Nashville, though. So here is where I differ with Scott. If we are going to talk about not the best season among goaltenders in the NHL, because I think Vasilevsky wins that argument hands down, most valuable, here is my argument against Soros being the most valuable goaltender to his team. While Scott makes a very compelling argument that Nashville's ascension in the second half of the year has coincided with Saros playing really, really well. And it does look like they are poised to make the playoffs as a result. The two points I will make against Saros being the most valuable goaltender. And again, we don't have an award for that. We have the Vezina, which doesn't take into account most valuable. But Scott brought it up, so I'm gonna go with his line of thinking. Pekka Rinne was not some like bystander this year. Pekka Rinne did a lot of good work for the Predators when they turned things around. If I recall, Saros was injured for the two games that Nashville played at Amalie Arena, their final two games of the four, and they won the second of those games. Rinne was in net, and that was the game that got them rolling. They beat the Lightning 4-5-1, if memory serves. And Rinne played not the majority of the games, but he played a fair amount in this hot stretch in the second half of the year for Nashville. So I don't think it was only Saros. And then the other part is, we have watched the Lightning, and we have watched every minute of every game they've played, and we have seen how porous they have been defensively at times, and how Vasilevsky has repeatedly bailed them out. To me, when Nashville got going in the second half of the year, their team defense had a big role in it, so that they were not asking their goaltenders to be superhuman, kind of like what we're seeing from the Lightning in recent weeks, where Vasilevsky hasn't had to be the Vasilevsky that we saw at points earlier in the year. So look, this is kind of a straw man argument? Like there's no point to this because there is no award for the most valuable goaltender. But I think I would differ with his take that if he were to rank goalies on his heart list, he would put Saros ahead of Vasilevsky. I think Saros has had a great year, but I think the team in front of him, when they got hot and when Saros did his best work, he was part of the equation. He didn't have an outsized role in their formula. That's kind of how I look at it.
It's valid, Dave, the point you bring up. What the league should do, and I will demand this, Dave, because I will write to Gary Bettman, and I will petition
yes.
this. I think what the league should do, because let's face it, when you start talking about most valuable player, I think at any sport, but particularly hockey, everybody talks about you need good goaltending. Well, if you don't have good goaltending, are you making the playoffs? Maybe. Depends. I mean, you take Andre Vasilevsky off this team, Curtis McElhinney is your goaltender. Are you a playoff team? Maybe. I don't know. But theoretically, your goaltender is the most valuable player on your team. If you don't have good goaltending, you're not going to achieve what you want to achieve. Doesn't mean you can't get hot. Doesn't mean you can't strike lightning in a bottle, no pun intended. But for the most part, you need to have somebody you can go to and say, this is our guy, and if you don't play well, we have big problems. And I almost think the league probably what it should do at the end of the year, however they want to do it, you say, okay, we have an award for the best forward. You've got the award for the best defenseman. And then you've got the award for the best goaltender. Then those three players, whoever that is, should be up for the best player in the league. You get the best defenseman, you get the best forward, and you get the best goaltender. However you want to come up with that criteria, that's fine. Because I think that would be more of an interesting debate than, well, look, Connor McDavid's been outstanding. He's got 96 points. He's going to get 100. But to your point, if you take him off the team, in that division specifically this year, do you think Edmonton still makes the playoffs? Well, I think their goaltending probably would have something to do with that. Draisaitl would say, listen, I'm pretty good too. But if you take a goaltender off of a team who's played really, really well, the chances are your backup is not going to achieve that same success. And so by default, you're not going to be as good. So at least what it does is, Dave, it gives everybody some skin in the game. I mean, all those years, Nicholas Lidstrom was considered the best player in the game, certainly was winning the Norris trophies for sure. I bet you there's some people who would have said, yeah, are the Red Wings that dominant? If Nicholas Lidstrom is not in the lineup, I think you can make a strong argument they wouldn't be. But at least that way you have every position in the running. It doesn't mean they're going to win it every year, meaning the defenseman or even the goaltender. But I feel like we're not even having those conversations with those positions because it typically does go to the best offensive player. And as you and I just discussed, it's most valuable. And you can be the most valuable player and not be a forward. Unfortunately, the league gets away with it by assigning other specific awards to those positions. And I'm just not sure that makes a lot of sense. I understand they've done it for a long time. I get it. I'm not necessarily going back and saying, well, you need to do those awards over. What's done is done. But what I am saying is I do think certain years, other positions have had a greater impact than the player who scores the most points when it comes to most valuable. And a lot of times it would be the goaltender. So why don't we just get representation every year, have the three best players from each group in the running for an award, and let's find out who is MVP that year. I think it makes some sense. And like I said before, it gets some skin in the game for all the positions that have been left out.
And you also have the Lindsay Award, which is voted on by the players. And that is for basically the best player.
Yes.
That's taking the valuable part of the equation out. And I do think that McDavid will win that award this year.
He's going to run away
with the Hart Trophy too.
Yeah, he's going to run away with it. There's no question. Yeah. But I think you understand my point, because every year you could theoretically say a goaltender is the MVP of the league just because of how precious that position is.
David,
it's almost kind of a contradiction. Every year we're told how valuable it is to have an elite goaltender or have a number one guy. And if you don't have good goaltending, that's a big problem. If you don't believe me, look at Philadelphia. Philadelphia was supposed to be, now take that for what it is, I certainly had them high on my list as a team. I know you didn't, so your kudos to you. But a lot of people...
I was very bullish on
Flyers. I didn't know if they were going to win the Stanley Cup, but a lot of it, Dave, was perceived because they figured out their goaltender. And you know what happened? Their goaltending imploded in addition to a lot of other things. But you can sit there and say it started to go downhill because they weren't getting key saves at the right time. And Carter Hart was a big reason why they started to play poorly. Not the only reason. So every year, a goaltender should be in the running for that award because there's no other position that is more valuable than having good goaltending. And so I think the league maybe needs to reevaluate it. They probably won't, because this is a league too at the same time that doesn't spend Tom Wilson but finds the Rangers organization and suspends. What did Buchnevich get? He got a game, which at the very least, that's what I thought Tom Wilson should have gotten. But you understand the point. It's just there's a lot of confusion when it comes to these things. But I do think it's fun to debate, and I agree with you. I do think Connor McDavid is going to run away with some of those awards. I'm just saying I'd like to have some other competition from other positions in the running, and we're just not going to see that. Al wants to know, Dave, wonder if Cooper goes 11-7. Now, I don't know if he means 11-7 tonight or the rest of the way, but we have seen him do it. I don't know if he would, understanding that Jan Ruta certainly is coming back from an injury. Do they want to protect him a bit? That does mean you're taking
it's
out
possible.
A forward.
I mean, all he said was Ruta is in. He didn't say Ruta is in and Luke Shen is out.
Yeah. Somebody probably should have followed up with that, but I understand.
As Coop says, show up at warm-ups. Or maybe 7:05 or whatever time it is that they announce the starting lineups and the scratches.
Yeah.
It's possible, and it's certainly possible they could go 11-7 in the playoffs, depending on how a series is going and what they feel about that particular matchup.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those two, because I do feel like Tampa Bay's depth on the back end has gotten a lot better as the season has progressed, and certainly the addition of Savard, I think, has strengthened that. But what's interesting about the back end, Dave, and, you know, again, we're talking probably about a player who's going to be playing 10 to 12 minutes at most in the playoffs, because I don't know how many more minutes Jan Ruta is going to get beyond that. Maybe he does, assuming he's in the top six. And I think you could probably make a strong case Luke Shen has the inside track to be that sixth defenseman right now, although Jan Ruta, again, if he plays well the remaining one game or two games that he's slated to play, that could be a situation where it's kind of a moot point. But I am interested to see if that is something that John Cooper would deploy during the playoffs, because I think the take is, at least my end, I still think their forward group is a little more deep than their back end. And if you did go 11-7, boy, you're sitting, I think, a pretty valuable member at that forward position, more so than you would on the back end. But again, John Cooper has shown the ability to press the right buttons or push the right buttons, which is one of the reasons why I think, you know, off topic a little bit, he needs to get consideration for coach of the year a little bit more often, because those are pretty important decisions, and it seems like the ones he does make oftentimes work out.
Yeah, he absolutely should earn consideration for
that. But do you have any feel for that? Like 11-7, 12-6, or come playoff time? Like, it would shock me if they won 11-7, just because I think they're 12 forwards this year, whoever that is, Dave.
Yeah.
It's pretty
especially
solid.
Especially if 86 and 91 are coming back for game one of the playoffs. Then correct. Definitely you're not going 11-7. You got two guys coming back from long-term absences. You want to protect them.
It's a great point.
So I think until Stamkos and Kucherov get acclimated, and who knows how long that's going to take, my sense would be probably 12 forwards.
Yeah.
But maybe they get acclimated right away. And maybe after a game or two in a series, the Lightning decide that they want to throw the seventh defenseman in there. They certainly have done it before. They did it for a number of games in the playoff run last year.
They did. It's a good point. Before we sign off, and by the way, Matt Larkin was supposed to catch up with us today. We're going to shoot for him for next week, and he had a couple of family emergencies that popped up, so certainly want to give him the time to take care of that, and we'll get on Matt. We'll get his thoughts from the hockey news next week, which will be good because it'll be playoff week, and everybody's going to have a lot of opinions on matchups and where things are. What is your anticipation tonight, Dave? It's not a must-win game for Tampa Bay. We know that. Although, it is important. It's a much bigger game for Dallas. They need a lot of help in addition to running the table the rest of the way. Looks like Anton Khudobin's going to start in net.
On his birthday, no less.
On his birthday. So
turns
maybe
35 today.
35 years old.
Yeah.
Oh. Two guys are around that same age with Curtis McElhinney in net. What are you anticipating tonight from the Stars? Going to need to score more than two, I would think, tonight. And maybe they have a shot with McElhinney, not Vasi.
Well, if the Stars lose in regulation, they're out. If they lose in overtime in the shootout, they're still hanging on by their fingernails. If they win, then they do put a little bit more pressure on Nashville to try and take care of business. Nashville plays its final two against
Carolina
right? On Saturday and Monday. And from the Lightning's perspective, yeah, you know, the Lightning have a very narrow path to first, but it's still there. And with a win tonight, they would shift a little bit of, if pressure is the right word. I don't know if pressure is the right word, but they keep the intrigue for potentially finishing first alive at least for one more day, because both the Lightning and Hurricanes play Saturday night. And even if the Lightning lose in overtime or a shootout, they still have a chance at first. So, I mean, that's kind of taking the end of the game, what we're going to think of the end of the game. I think for the Lightning, they just want to keep playing the way they've been playing, which they've done,
yep.
Whether it's been Vasilevskiy in net, McElhinney in net, or Chris Gibson in net.
Be a good test again tonight. We will have all the coverage beginning at 6 o'clock with Brian Burns and Kaylee Chelios. I'll have the pregame at 6:30. Dave and Phil on the call at 7. And then afterwards, we've got the last call presented by Jack Daniels, which you can listen to. Brian Engblom and I are going to break that all down. So we invite you to listen to it as well. Dave, great job as always. Great job this week. I'll talk to you at the rink.
All right. Talk to you tonight.
Thanks to Scott Burnside from The Athletic. Thanks to Steve Ersnick as well. I am Greg Linnelli. We'll be with you again on Monday, noon to 1 for another edition of Power Lunch. But catch us starting at 6 o'clock tonight with the pregame skate show on Lightning Power Play.